Kathy Fink, Marcy Marks are their legends. We've talked often over the years, just never on Unreal Bluegrass before. Saw them on a recent trip to Raleigh, North Carolina, at least met with Kathy there. And she gave me the new album, which is entitled Wahoo. We're going to play some songs from that. But in the second hour, you're going to hear part one of a two-part interview with Kathy and Marcy. 40-something albums into their career. That's just with the two of them. A couple of Grammys under their belt. All kinds of teaching and all sorts of ideas put out into the music world. So it went on a bit, but you're going to enjoy it. And you're going to get to hear Kathy Fink and Marcy Marks are in toto, I think. We talk about the music, but we talk about them and their careers and how they came together and all the amazing things they've been up to. There's so many different rhythms and bluegrass and tangos, so many different types of music on this new album, Wahoo. But that's what Kathy and Marcy do. They travel around. They play every kind of string instrument you can imagine, and they like to mix up the rhythms and the sounds that they're giving to you. Part one of my conversation with Kathy Fink and Marcy Marks. So I hope you enjoy it. I certainly did, and we're not going to be so many years in between doing this. And they're just wonderful to talk to. You're going to enjoy it. I am really happy to finally have Kathy Fink and Marcy Markser on Unreal Bluegrass. I've been angling at this for a while. Kathy, I was so glad that you found me in Raleigh and handed me the new CD, Wahoo, which I've listened to at length. But first of all, welcome to Unreal Bluegrass.
Thank you. It's a pleasure for us to be here with the 2018 IBMA Broadcaster of the Year, but more importantly, a broadcaster that we have enjoyed and admired for a long time.
Well,
thank you, Steve.
You're very kind. You're very kind. As we were talking off the air, I want to talk about, because we've not talked before, so a lot of times if it's a second or third time guest, we can pick up where we were, but I want to talk about the CD. I want to talk about things you're working on. And Kathy, you mentioned something to me about funding the scholarship fund, I will call it, but I know you're very good at talking. And by the way, if any of the listeners have never seen Kathy Fink and Marcy Markser, you're going to get to a venue and you're going to think, well, there must be 10 more people that are going to come out because Kathy and Marcy are here, but what are all these other instruments doing? Nobody presents as many different instruments in different styles so well as Kathy Fink and Marcy Markser, and it's like, oh, these two people are going to play all these instruments, and you do it, and then your vocals aside, which are just splendid harmonies that you do, but I want everyone to go see you, and I also want, I'm going to get off of this jag in a minute, I want everyone to see you, and I want them to listen to not just the music and the vocals, but you are so full of information and knowledge. On the new album, you have an Ola Bell Reed song. I know you could go for days about Ola Bell Reed. And when you see Kathy and Marcy live, you get background information, you get education, and you get a point of view on women's issues as it relates to music and the world. And I absolutely love that fact of seeing you guys live.
Thank you so much.
And you thought no one was paying attention.
Yeah, a lot of times you think nobody's paying attention.
Whoever, 46
years of doing this, 2 Grammys, and 14 Grammy nominations has not given us a bad head.
And
you had a speech list there for a second.
No, okay. Well, and I don't mean to do that because I really do want the guests to talk because people hear me too much anyway. So Kathy, if you want to talk a little bit about the Kathy and Marcy Markster, the band and things. By the way, I started adding up numbers of albums and I lost track. So we're just going to assume that there's a lot of them. I have the last one with I want to say Shout and Shine.
Yes,
yeah,
Shout
okay.
and Shine is the last one, and October 11th, Wahoo's going to release.
Yeah.
And according to our count, if we put together all of the albums that we've done together and the 3 that I previously did with Duck Donald, then I believe that Wahoo is album number 48.
See, I around 35, I just kind of I couldn't count anymore, so...
well, this might not be sounding right, you know?
You kind of need an abacus to keep track of projects.
That's what I need, an abacus. Thank you. I'll go get it.
And those are the Kathy and Marcy projects. They don't include the projects that we've produced for other people.
Yeah.
By Khan or, Tom Paxton. Back in 1992, Marcy produced 100 songs for McGraw-Hill School Publishing's whole language reading curriculum. You know, there's been a lot of producing for other artists on the side, and as many people know, we've been working for several years with Cane Mill Road and produced their first album. Just produced the brand new album by Eliza Meyer called Hello Stranger, and Eliza is a young friend of ours, but a lifelong friend of Liam Purcell from Cane Mill Road, and so we brought Liam in to co-produce that, and so those 48 albums, I think, are just the ones that have our names as the lead artists.
I kind of knew you were involved in other projects, and like I said, I quit counting because I lost track. Either one of you, Kathy or Marcy or both, as you've done this before, explain to the audience, the listeners of Unreal Bluegrass, a little bit about yourselves. And the origin goes back a long way, so you can handle it from there.
Well, our separate origins include... Here's what I'll do. I'll give you my origin prior to meeting Marcy, and she'll give you hers prior to meeting me.
Okay.
And then we'll pick up from there.
All right.
And, you know, in short, I grew up in Baltimore in a not particularly musical family, but I loved music and pursued it. Landed eventually in Montreal during the dregs of the 60s folk scare. It was about 1971 or two. And started hanging out in folk clubs. And I was a terrible songwriter, and I played guitar and eventually took up Appalachian dulcimer thanks to the music of Richard and Mimi Farina.
Wow.
But that led me to traditional dulcimer players, which led me to traditional banjo and old-time music, and also led me to a bluegrass band, the first bluegrass band I ever heard, the Bobby Cusson Trio, and there was a crazy left-handed guitar player in that group called Duck Donald, and we ended up becoming a duo and traveling and touring together for 6 years, and after that, we basically did 250 gigs a year that I booked before there were cell phones and answering machines, and we kind of, I would say we burned out. We did a lot. And the centerpiece of our music was learning every brother duet in bluegrass that existed. And sang them all, everything from the Delmore brothers, who of course are not bluegrass, but were adopted by a lot of bluegrass.
They were so good that bluegrass couldn't ignore them, I think is what happened.
I think that's a beautiful way to put it. And while all that was happening, we were on what I'm going to call the Earn While You Learn program. So I'm learning guitar and old-time banjo, bluegrass banjo. You know, eventually the dulcimer dropped off and I took up the fiddle. We had all the harmony singing going. It was really a power group, and I just think that we did 15 years of work in 5-6 years. And eventually I moved back to the States where I grew up and took up residence in a sort of suburb of Washington, D.C. in Maryland, and have now been there since September 1979. So, Marcy, quick background from you.
Okay. I grew up in Michigan and started playing music with my family. I had an aunt that lived across the street from us who played the guitar and sang country gospel. And my mom and two of her sisters had a pops duo of the day. You'd call it swing now. And my grandma played Barrel House Blues and Honky Tonk Piano, but she also played the Hammer Dulcimer. And she, her name was Florence Conkey. Her and her mother, my great-grandmother, who I barely remember, she played the fiddle, and they used to play for Henry Ford's dances around Detroit. You know, any musician who played fiddle and hammer dulcimer could work back then in Michigan. And so I grew up with all those influences.
I have to say, Marcy, that is such a strange concept that if you could play those instruments, you could find a job in Detroit. It didn't occur to me that could be, but there's so much I don't know.
Well, and, you know, the dulcimer, the hammer dulcimer playing, was glorious as a kid. I remember having conventions, they called it, or gatherings, and everybody would meet in a gymnasium, a school gymnasium room, and there'd be 40 or 50 hammer dulcimers in a circle on the, all along the outside of the room. And that was in the days before automatic tuners. But, you know,
oh,
I say all those strings were together. People would play tunes together, and it was absolutely the most heavenly sound I've ever heard. And if people played other instruments, they stood outside the circle, kind of in the background. Mm-hmm. But the focus was on the dulcimers.
Uh-huh.
It was really remarkable. So my first real instrument was the hammer dulcimer. I would be a baby sitting in my grandma's lap, and she'd hold my hands on the hammers, and we'd play patterns and little tunes. And then when I was five, I started playing the guitar. And what you would do is at that time, you would hang around the adults, and when you got good enough at your chords or whatever it is you're working on, they'd let you come closer. So if you were not up to speed, you'd have to sit on the outside of the circle. And once you got closer up to speed, you could get a little closer to the adult.
It's kind of like will the circle be broken?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I think that's not uncommon in musical families. The kids are inspired, and those who stick with it are, like, nobody pushes you, but those who stick with it are eventually welcomed in and just part of the group. And then in school, especially high school, I met a lot of people who had come up from the South to work in the factories. And there was an amazing bluegrass contingency of people. There was a jam in a local music store in Flint. And I went there every Friday night, where people would form bands on the fly and then get up and perform. And there were always people who would show you things, teach you things. And I just learned so much there. I tried bluegrass banjo, and I loved flat picking the guitar. Then I had an old-time string band, which was totally different, called the Bosom Buddies, as I got a little older. And we traveled around the country doing concerts and dances. And that's when I met Kathy. I met Kathy in 1980. That band was still going. And Kathy was the most versatile musician I had met at that time. And the band, the Bosom Buddies, there were a couple members who were very versatile. In fact, when we were going to bring a new instrument into the band, the mandolin player, Carrie Potter, and I would have contests, like friendly, happy contests. And whoever got to play that instrument, whoever got good on that instrument first would get to play it in the band. Sometimes it was her and sometimes it was me. But we really spurred each other on in terms of content. So when I met Kathy, she was the only person I knew besides us who were playing in elementary schools and doing concerts at night and basically enjoying every gig. So we were traveling and doing concerts and festivals. Kathy was traveling on her own and doing concerts and festivals. And it's like the more we worked, the happier we were. And we just hit it off, and
we met at a festival called the Toronto Folk Festival, which was a brief experience. That festival only happened 1 year, and the organizer was attempting to replace the Mariposa Folk Festival while Mariposa was on hiatus. And the festival was poorly organized, and it went bankrupt before it was over. And so there's this joke that the meeting of Kathy Fink and Marcy Marshall was the one good thing to come out of the Toronto Folk Festival. Now, we have a long story about it that we tell as a musical story called Remembering Elizabeth Cotton or When Kathy Met Marcy. And it's an hour-long storytelling experience that you can see up on our YouTube page.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
And it's a pretty fun story because Elizabeth Cotton factors the woman who wrote Freight Train, Freight Train,
right.
Going So Fast,
yeah.
Factors into when Marcy and I met. And we had a tremendous time writing that story and thinking of all the times that we had run into or met or interacted with Elizabeth Cotton and how it influenced the two of us but also the experiences that we had that led up to that and what happened afterwards. And so, you know, we love being musicians, but we also like bringing in a lot of storytelling. And from time to time, we venture into straight storytelling, bring in a bunch of music into it. And so that's a kind of fun thing that we do. And, you know, the Canadian connection, which you and I were talking about a little earlier, you can see it at IBMA in a beautiful way. Because when I lived in Winnipeg, one of my, well, first of all, my first banjo teacher was a man named Barry Luft. And Barry's still around. He lives in Calgary. He taught me how to play banjo in about 1974. His daughter, Kara Luft, is a member of a group called the Small Glories. And the Small Glories just signed with Red House Records, which is now owned by Compass Records.
Right.
And I believe 2 years ago, they were also showcase artists at IBMA. Well, I was at Barry's house the day Carol was born. And here she is, you know, making it as a musician. But I also taught, when I was 22, a 12-year-old banjo player named Daniel Kulak, who is a phenomenal musician on lots of instruments. And he was getting started on banjo. He had a ton of talent. I gave him a bunch of lessons pro bono. Really, there were 10 years between us. Well, when you're 12 and 22, that's a lot. Now that I'm 66 and he's 56, it ain't nothing. Well, Daniel taught Kaya Cater how to play banjo. Oh, and he taught Allison DeGroote how to play banjo.
I know.
And,
of course,
Allison's everywhere.
Yes.
Now.
Oh, and she's so good at, it's just,
so good,
yeah.
And she's so kind in the same way that Daniel is kind. And she is also, I think, forging her own path in old-time banjo, which is something that Daniel does. Daniel is the old-time banjo what Bela Fleck is to bluegrass. The versatility, the different styles that he can play. He's done entire jazz albums playing clawhammer banjo. It's great.
Wow.
And so, I'm writing
as fast as I can, Kathy, so just keep... and I get to listen to this again, but I'm writing on down all these sites and sub-sites because I'm going to look them all off. But you were talking about Daniel, I interrupted.
Yeah, so... And Daniel has a very small internet presence. I don't think he has a cell phone. You know, I think he's sort of he's an analog guy in a digital world, so to speak.
Joe Walsh did a whole album premised on that. I don't mean the bluegrass Joe Walsh. I mean the Funk 49 and all that. His opening song on one of his albums was Analog Guy in a Digital World.
Yeah, so, you know, for us, one of the really fun things is watching the seeds that we feel like we planted sprout all over the place. And, you know, by another example, in the bluegrass world, I ain't going to take 1 ounce of credit for all the talent in Cane Mill Road. You know, Liam Purcell, Trey Wellington, they're neighbors of ours at our second home in Lansing, North Carolina, which is the home of Ola Bell Reed. We became friends with them when they were little kids and mentored them some. But, you know, their talent is resting on their own shoulders. And what we've been able to do is just help point them in the right direction here and there, give them some advice, give them some help. We produced one of their albums, Pro Bono. We can't give people talent, but we can certainly encourage that talent and help them do well with it.
Flies also see the young girl flat pickers, who I think every one of them that I can think of out there working, Courtney Hartman and Molly Toddle, all, I can't take responsibility for their success or anything, but they all came through my workshops.
Wow.
At one point or another in their life. So I met them when they were just little kids, teaching at Steve Kaufman's camp and a Western camp and other places. So it's been wonderful to watch the growth of women in guitar.
Or and all string instruments, really. And if you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Kathy Fink and Marcy Markser. And I'm so glad, by the way, you mentioned Courtney Hartman. I think, you know, the Delamay splinters off of that, and people might recognize her first from that. But she is a phenomenal guitar player. And, of course, everybody knows Molly Tuttle by now. But I'm so glad you mentioned Courtney Hartman and that you had some your past
well,
kind of crossed
Courtney,
with her.
As a little girl, she played beautifully. And she wasn't out to punch anybody with her guitar playing. You know, she was playing like herself, which I absolutely love about her playing now. She never went down I mean, I'm not saying contests are bad. Contests are good. In fact, we did Winfield together one year and entered the contest. We both did. And that's a great thing, but to feel the pressure of the need to one-up somebody is something that holds people back musically, I think. And she's always really played with taste and style, beautiful tone.
Yeah,
and, you know, 25 years ago, I was Rhiannon Giddens' first banjo teacher. She was a 15-year-old girl whose mom brought her to the Swannanoa music camp. And we had, you know, a week of banjo lessons. That's nothing compared to all of the other teachers and mentors that she's had. But, you know, look at the amazing work that she's doing. And more importantly, the give back that she's doing to the African American community in terms of highlighting the history of this music to songwriters, to young people, and to me, that's where we're at our best. Not just doing a performance where people give you a standing ovation, but where the music is part of our lives and it makes us, by being part of the community, bigger than ourselves.
And that's a great point, Kathy. We were talking at one point about and I forget if it was off the air, I think it's probably on the air, about the stage shows and the knowledge, and even inside this new album, Wahoo, which, by the way, I have right in front of me, has smiley pictures of Kathy and Marcy on the front with ukuleles, but there's a lot more instrumentation on there. But even inside the album, if you just read the liner notes, you actually mention that you give credit to someone who, a guy named Steve, I got to look it up, Steve, I'm going to say Ballman, who taught Kathy Morgan Megan how to play this? I guess it sounds like an Irish tune. It's my guessing. I don't know much more.
It's an Irish O'Carolan tune.
Yeah, and so you give credit and you pull everybody in, and you do this not only in your liner notes, you do it live. And when you talk about Rhiannon Giddens, you are pulling everybody with you and the culture with you, just like she is now that she's at a position where she can say, "Look at this part of my culture." She got a new album out now. And it just kind of bringing, I really, really like that. I like it that artists have time to do that and have the knowledge to do it, that their skill base hasn't gotten ahead of what their culture, what they bring into their culture. Like the new Wahoo album you have, I call it a calypso tune. You have a tango. You have a traditional kind of high on the mountain, the Ola Bell Reed, which, by the way, the vocals are just phenomenal, as everything is. But and you even have a tango that Marcy wrote, and you pull in some. It's just it's everything. Your music is, it's cliche to say world music, but it really is from the perspective of this American music, borrowing and bringing in music from around the world. And I don't hear many calypso tinted songs or instrumentals on something with two people that I know so well that I know kind of what you do, but you pull in everything. Western swing, it just goes on and on and on because it's good music, and you do it and you give credit to the culture and the people that have brought it to your awareness.
Well, and the ukulele world is sort of, you know, we see you and a lot of people who listen to your show in the bluegrass world, old time music world, but we've been a part, and Marcy in particular, but we've been a large part of growing what's becoming this giant community of ukulele players.
Yeah.
We run a huge ukulele festival. And so, you know, in a way, there's a little compartmentalization in our lives because do the youth people talk to the bluegrass people, or do those people talk to the social justice people? Well, on Wahoo, you know, we sort of try and get all those people in the same room. And so Marcy had this brilliant solo fingerpicked blues version of Ola Belle Reid's classic song, High on a Mountain. And it was such a beautiful version. And she's just, like, fooling around with it on the ukulele. And I'm going, no, we need to sing that. And, of course, we knew Ola Belle Reid. We were very close to Ola Belle, to her whole family. We have a house in Lansing, North Carolina, where Ola Belle grew up and helped run a festival there that honored Ola Belle. And now we work with the Ashe County, North Carolina Arts Council doing an Ola Belle Reid songwriting retreat to honor Ola Belle, et cetera, et cetera. Well, how does that fit into ukulele? The only way it fits into ukulele is Marcy had this great arrangement. It gave us an opportunity to do something different with a classic song, and it also brings back something that Ola Belle used to say to us. Like, we'd go to her house and sing our versions of her songs, and she'd look at us and go, y'all have your own way of doing things, don't you?
She loved it. She didn't want anybody to sound like her. If somebody walked in with a trombone, she was thrilled. But, you know, when I look at our music, the music that Kathy and I do together, I think of it as, you have the saying, roots and branches. Well, we have one foot in the roots, having worked with Pete Seeger and Mike Seeger and Ola Belle and as many of our heroes and heroines as we could.
Patsy Montana.
Oh, yeah.
But we have the other foot in the branches. And we have young people coming to us to learn now, which is really interesting. But so we're that in-between generation who knew the old guys who played with Bill Monroe and Vassar Clements, and the list goes on and on. But then now that generation is gone,
yeah.
And we're ensconced in the branches too, which is a great place to be.
And it's great that you carry that along. I was having this, it was a very casual conversation with Mike Compton, who's very aware of, you know, I got to play on stage with Bill Monroe. And so as you and I, we're probably about the same age. We're growing up, and all these first generation, will say, for this audience listening, all these bluegrass, they're still around, and they're still active, and they're still creating. And I think we were, both of you, I always kind of thought, well, I guess they'll be around forever. Well, that can't happen. But so now there is this recognition that when you're saying you were exposed to the first generation, because it really is that fresh of a music, whatever bluegrass it is, which is why I call the show Unreal Bluegrass, because I don't like to get into those discussions. But all of the originators were still active, and you could see them. But there is a recognition now that, yeah, and you're taking that obligation to take what you saw and experienced, and keeping it alive and keeping it fresh for further interpretation, but you're giving your impressions of what that original generation brought to you.
Yes, that's a beautiful position to be in. It's a beautiful way to be in music. But we also have the added honor of being able to treat people the way they treated us, in a welcoming way, pulling them in.
Mm-hmm.
And if we see people trying to put dividers up, we understand that the older generation didn't do that.